Welcome and breathe in air. Abstract Illusions Radio, the show that explores and exposes the many aspects of expression, with your host, Jennifer Hellman. Good evening, everyone. This is Jennifer Hellman. I thank you very much for tuning into AIR. Tonight, I have a wonderful guest that is truly an honor. Stuart Wilde is a maverick writer, thought leader, and a best-selling author for more than 20 books on empowerment, spirituality, and progressive metaphysics, including the popular Miracles, Silent Power, and The Sixth Sense. He also has been toured with Chopra, Louise Hayes. He's been part of the I Can Do It conferences. He is known for bringing humor and practical understanding to the cutting-edge work that intersects the leading physicists and the time. His latest book is Grace, Gaia, and the End of Times. It is a wonderful book that confirmed and reaffirmed some of my experience in my life, so that's why it's such an honor to welcome you, sir, to the program.
Thank you very, very much for having me on your show. I'm delighted.
The book is, it really, I sat there, I actually stopped and cried because it just kind of gave me comfort for when I was experienced that I wasn't going totally nuts. So I do thank you for this book very much.
Yeah, it's a book that talks about our evolution, but also it talks about how we become whole and redeem ourselves and how we make it right with the animals and the planet and the whole nine yards so that justice prevails in the end, you know?
Yes, and it's really, it's very well written, and I just started reading it, and it's very interesting how I have noticed your work. I have not read any of your other books, I'll be honest. Every time I would say, oh, what about him? They say, not yet.
Not yet.
Then with this one, they said, yes, do it.
Cool.
And I read it, and it's like, I can't put it down.
Yeah. Some people are sort of moved by it, and then other people are slightly jolted because I give them a lot about the developments and all the stuff that's going on, you know.
Yes.
And, so some people, you know, might want to live with their head in the sand, but I always feel like if you know things, you know, safer.
Oh, yes. And it definitely does cover a lot. So let's say, you basically have said what the purpose of the book, you've already answered my first question. So what is grace? Can you describe it?
Well, okay, before I can answer this question, I always have to back it up with a preamble. Opposite us is a mirror world. The shamans in South America call it the Luna, which means of the moon.
Mm-hmm.
We call it the mirror world because it's akin to Dirac's antiparticle world. And it's actually a world that is opposite us where humans exist in this other world. So those humans are inside their heavens, they're in their hells now. They don't die and go to heaven, they don't die and go to hell. They're actually in hell, in an altered body, in a doppelganger, in a double self, a mirror self. That mm-hmm. mirror self is essentially the being that is projected from your subconscious mind. So you may not know very much about that person because you may not necessarily know much about your subconscious mind unless you particularly studied it. So we're inside this mirror world and we are evolving in there. Your mirror world person does things that you have no knowledge of, obviously not at all, and yet it receives information from you. When you die, your brain ceases. There is no way to retrieve the information of your life. Now, Christians will tell you, well, you have an immortal soul. And they're completely 100% right, but your mortal soul is this doppelganger, this mirror person in this other world that retains the entire memory of your life. So we watch this person. And in these mirror worlds, which we watch every day and we have done for many years now, we can see grace as a golden light. Sometimes it's very deep blue. Sometimes it's purple and sometimes it's mustard gold. But it is mm-hmm. traveling towards us in this sort of swirling vortex of energy. And what we soon came to realize was that grace is data-driven, meaning that it isn't just like a sort of warm light and, ooh, wow, isn't that nice, God's light is upon me, which is beautiful, of course, and you can't decry it, but it is ram-jam full of information.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the things that happens is that as this grace flows through from these other worlds to this world, we experience a phenomenon called the morph. And the morph is when the room begins to dematerialize and go soapy-looking, and the humans begin to dematerialize as well. But inside that morph are these little speckles that are blue and red and yellow and sometimes green, but mostly blue and red and white. And we call that the speckled ambience. And so from the morph, which comes from grace, is information. So we realize that to download or decode the information, we would just have to sit in trance and watch these visions. So myself and a group of people, that number maybe 20, 30, 40 people now, watch these visions day in and day out. And we have watched many. Like, I've watched hundreds of thousands of visions, and I've documented, actually written down in my computer, 200,000 visions. The visions taught us about the dimensions. They taught us about the evolution of humanity. They taught us about the pain of the animals. They taught us about the degradation of the feminine spirit, how the feminine spirit needs to be restored. They talk about justice. The codes tell us many, many things, you know. Miracle healings, this, that, and the other. It's all technology. It's like literally leaving your computer on at night, and in the morning there are trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions of gigabytes of information there. So we watch grace, and we know it's data-driven, and we know that we can ask for information from grace and receive it as a download. And so that's really what I wrote the book about, was to show people, hey, if you quieten your mind, if you still your mind, if you get deep inside the purity of your soul, if you don't have an agenda of power trips and control and look at me and all that rah-rah stuff, you're just humble, you can download extraordinary information from grace. And you don't have to know much about it. The same way as I can download a tune from iTunes without really knowing how it works, but I press a button on this little box and there's my tune, you know? And it's the same for us humans. We can lie in meditation and we can download this grace and it can change your life.
It definitely does. And it's a wonderful experience.
People need to access it more and more and more because, you know, times are changing and they need information. And so that's what I teach people. I teach people to see visions. I teach them to download this information. Of course, we built up like a dictionary, a lexicon of information and terms and vision. So we can kind of explain a lot of what people see because we already know, because 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 of us have seen that same vision in different contexts. And that way we came to triangulate what a vision means, you know?
Right. Now,
so that's what we do. We provide information in that way.
Through your workshops, you teach people the visions and stuff. You also teach them how to process their shadow, the dark side of them, because they need to really clear that out or understand it most definitely.
Yes.
And really
in that area, I've got myself into lots of trouble over the years, and many people came to hate me and point their finger at me. But the problem is this, that the celestial light, the celestial dimensions, which we can see all the time, they are surrounded by two bands of darkness, very, very thick, very evil bands of darkness, which is a technicality which we may not want to get into right now, but they're surrounded by bands of darkness. And you might think to yourself, well, why would a celestial heaven be surrounded by a band of darkness? Well, it's like this. Imagine that, say, the heaven is this huge house on the hill, and the lights are on, and the party's on, and everybody's in love, and it's all happening. And on the outside of that house, outside of the estate, are all these villains that are trying to get in to steal the jewelry. Do you follow me? It's like the celestial light is surrounded by evil because evil is trying to get to the celestial light. Do you follow me?
Yes.
So to get from where we are to the celestial light, you have to pass through two bands of evil. And, you know, I call it in my early books, the desolate plain. In order to get through that evil, to get past those ghouls, or to get past those negative worlds, you have to have a purity of spirit. To have that, you will have had to process your shadow. So that means you have to be humble, and you have to look at your arrogances, and your games, and your lies, and your dishonesty, and whatever else, you know? Your dysfunctions, essentially. And you have to admit to your dysfunctions, you know, and own them, and process them, and beg forgiveness for your transgressions, and then you can get through these dark areas and become safe and literally arrive in a celestial heaven while you're still alive. So that is
the goal for everyone. Not everyone, though. There's some people that have no interest. They're here just to go through the process, is what I basically, in the book you say there's 94% of the people have a lot of darkness in them.
Yeah, they're just cold. They're very cold because they have never really got into, like, you know, developing their own warmth, the trusting people, the tactile contact with the local tribe, with the celebration, with the kindness. I teach a philosophy of live and let live. You know, I told him, hey, let everybody be. You know, I call it tea with Hitler. You know, test yourself. Would you be able to sit down and have a cup of tea with Hitler and not mention the war? You know, let's talk about art, let's talk about Tibet, let's talk about painting, let's talk about his dog, let's talk about his girlfriend, but don't mention the war. You know, don't make him wrong. Spend half an hour having tea with Hitler and make him right, you know? That's not to say you would condone fascism or out of Hitler. It's to say, like, hey, you've got to make the world right. You know, you've got to... the shaman lady from California is a dear friend of mine. Denise Lynn, you know, she writes a lot of books on shamanism and women's things.
Right.
She says, you know, cast a soft eye. You have to learn to cast a soft eye. So that is the eye of forgiveness. If you can forgive the world, then gradually you will be forgiven.
And it is a fun journey to process this shadow.
It is a fun journey. Yeah. Yeah,
I think of it almost as a game these days, because I notice it. My guides have given me like a clue word that for me to check in to see where I'm at, and it just makes it fun to understand what's going on.
Jennifer, can I give your listeners a very quick little process, a shadow process that's really easy to
do? Sure.
Okay, this is what we suggest to people, that they go through what I call the forgiveness prayer for 30 days. And what you do is every day when you feel you're ready, that's it, and you've had a little bit of a look at some of the stuff you've done in this life, you get down on the carpet, on your knees, with your forehead on your ground, on the ground, and your hands crossed together, and you mount a prayer for forgiveness to your God, to Jesus, to Buddha, to Allah, to the beings, to Gaia, to the spirits, whatever. You just mount, you beg forgiveness. As you do the forgiveness prayer every single day for 30 days, your inner mind or your guides or whatever you like to call it begins to show you all sorts of stuff you've forgotten. And it actually becomes a shadow process during the forgiveness, because you start to see, oh my God, you know, like when you were 7, you stole your girlfriend's pencil box, you know, and you've completely forgotten about it. Do you follow me?
Yes.
So you're on the carpet, you're begging forgiveness, you're being as humble as possible. You're going through, let's say, speaking about some of the crimes you remember, and then bit by bit, your subconscious and your higher self will give you lots of other stuff that you can't remember. So it's a marvelous process. And at the end of the 30 days, it's not like you're free and clear and that's it. But hey, you made a great start.
Most definitely. And it is interesting, the clues they give you. It's kind of funny. It's like,
it's
wow,
clues, yeah.
I remember doing that. Wow,
yeah.
That's amazing that you're bringing that up.
Yeah.
And they will bring, at least for me, the vision of exactly that very moment. And they will show it to me again. It's just like,
that's just awesome.
Thank you very much for reminding me.
Yeah, and you'll see a symbol, a lamppost, a dress, a color, or a sound. It can be a bit of music, and it'll remind you of a person, a situation from years ago, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the process that everybody has to go through, because that whole shadow of our humanity is coming out now, whether people want it to come out or not, you know?
In a huge way.
it's coming out big time, you know? So what we say is, listen, love yourself and go through the process. Okay, but, I mean, I don't think you can con the readers and say it's a doll. It's not a laugh a minute. There are times when going through a stagger process is scary, and it makes you sad, and it's often you're ashamed, and many times you have deep regrets, if only you'd done this instead of that. But we're here to learn. We're divine spirits, you know, Dr. Wayne Dyer. He says, you know, we're infinite, immortal spirits inside a body. We're here to learn, you know? And just take your lessons, lessons. Let's do the lessons.
Yes, and do you feel that a lot of people are beginning to get over that resistance for the lessons? Do you think
that I'll tell you what. You know, like none of the big teachers would ever mention his shadow. It was kind of banned because the big publishing houses didn't want any of that stuff in the books. But I read a book a couple of days ago, which is written by a friend of mine, you know, Deepak Chopra, and he actually starts talking about the shadow traits of the disciples and the need to enter one's shadow as part of this process of redemption and so on. So I looked at that and I thought, wow, we have come a long way since like 10, 15 years ago, where any mention of that would have been absolutely banned, you know? And I think people are beginning to understand that that's the next step, you know, like, we're all sort of evolving more or less simultaneously, aren't we, around each other, helping each other. And if a few people come to one conclusion, then other people get the same conclusion, because it's usually the right conclusion. So, yes, I think pushing the shadow is something that will become It's been more common, more talked about. There was something on the front of one of those massive, you know, those big Science of Mind magazines that go to all the
Yes.
Science of Mind churches? And it was an article about how do you process a dark night of the soul. Well, a dark night of the soul is essentially, you know, a sort of an encounter with your shadow, you know? And it's sort of as a, wow, even the churches are starting to talk about these kinds of things, you know? And,
well, you know...
And that's
go
useful.
On.
It redeems people. If people are prepared to look at their shadow and stuff, they can redeem themselves, you know?
And dark nights of the souls are interesting process to go through. Not always fun. I've had several of them, and
yeah,
I'm grateful
yeah.
for them. But it definitely opened my eyes to some huge, it was a huge wake-up call for me.
Yes, yes.
Of exactly
I mean, yes,
how.
No, I mean, they can make you cry, you know, but then yeah, if you're kind to yourself and you have a humility, you'll suffer them. Or perhaps, you know, you need to go talk to a friend and sit and have a coffee and explain
right.
this terrible thing that you suddenly have come to realize, you know. But that
yeah.
also makes you better. You know, like, we can't get out of here as, like, just light beings. All of that, you know, we're light. Yeah, certainly we're light beings, but we're also very, very dark. And to complete
mm-hmm.
this journey, we have to become whole, which means some dark, some light, you know?
Right.
And that's it. And as we complete and we become whole, we process our karma, you know, and that's what has to happen now. People have to process their karma and process it quickly
mm-hmm.
before it catches up with them, you know?
It most definitely does. And that is it's a balancing act. And with my clients, I actually help them understand and kind of become friends with their shadow, because a lot of their shadows can be a warning. It can be a motivator
sure.
to do more light. So it really is a process that is, I find it very interesting to see people.
I'm sure that some of your clients' shadow actually gets up and tries to attack you, you know, because that's usually what happens is.
Yes.
And when a person sees their shadow, they can't own it, and so immediately they want to point the finger and say it must be those people over there or this group of people here or, you know, whatever it might be, you know. But
right.
That's just the early days when a person is trying to, like, get it away and send it off, you know.
Yes.
But, I mean, Jesus said persons, you're the devil of it. I mean, he said, get behind me, you know. He didn't
right.
say, hi, little brother, sit here, let's talk about my shadowy traits, you know. So
in
that process of the 40 days and 40 nights, Jesus did not want to go into his shadow. So he's a bit like the New Age, really. But you know, he didn't want to do it, you know. And it probably didn't do him any good, you know. But, like, Jesus had shadow traits, you know. I read an article once, right, saying that, you know, he beat up on the money changers in the temple, right?
Right.
But he wasn't squeaky clean honest himself, because he went to a cornfield and he took an ear of corn. The corn wasn't his field and it wasn't his corn, you know, and there's no mention in the Bible of him stopping and paying the guy, you know. So, okay, so he steals an ear of corn, so he's not above theft. Okay, it's only a small little theft, it's hardly a heinous crime. But, you know, the way he's saying is, hey, this guy wasn't perfect, you know.
Right.
He wasn't perfect, and he's up fight with the guys that are making money in the temple, and I don't know, it sounded like from the literature that the money changers were definitely ripping people off, but that doesn't really mean that you could go into the Bureau de Change with a big whip and start beating up all the stalls at the airport because they're changing money, you know? Do you know what I mean? There's a proper way of, like, processing your anger, you know? So Jesus would have had his shadow side. He would have had his weaknesses. He would have had his fears, you know? And, you know, you would have had a chance to process them, you know. And we have to process our fears. We have to become whole. You see, we can't be perfect, you know. We just
right.
have to fall in, we have to fall in love with, we have to fall in love with each other's imperfections. You know? You have to love
yes.
the person because they are imperfect. And you have to love yourself because you're imperfect. And you pray and hope that you'll do better tomorrow.
And that's the whole ball of wax, is just understanding and allowing and accepting people to be who and what they are.
Yes, that's exactly what it is, you know. I do a lot of ayahuasca workshops in South America, you know, probably you would have heard of that. It's the Brazilian vine.
Yes.
And so we take groups, 5, 6, 7, 8 groups a year down there. And you drink ayahuasca, and it's so beautiful because it's like this, it's this download of information, trillions of bits of information come firing in. And they're all there to help you process your karma, to process who you are. So, okay, so sometimes it's a ride through some ghastly bits, and sometimes it's a ride through absolutely extraordinarily celestial pieces. And then sometimes beings come along and repair you, you know, perform an operation inside of you. And this is all in the space of sort of a few hours, having taken this mystical drink, you know. And so we're ready. The world is ready to arrive and to witness the true digital fractal celestial worlds. And that's what I say to people. I say, hey, come to ayahuasca and I'll show you these celestial heavens. And yes, ayahuasca will also show you, you know, some of the stuff that's gone wrong in your life so that you can process it and become whole and become better.
And with that, real quick, I do want to say that Stuart is taking questions, so if you have questions for him, please call in. It's 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. And is there any kind of situation that you have come across that really just kind of blew your mind? I mean, that really just surprised
well,
you?
Well, in the early days when I saw people dematerializing, that definitely blew my mind. But now, like, I show people that in my seminars, you know, like I've got a gig in Las Vegas in September. Come along, you're going to see it. You're going to see people dematerializing right there. So that we got used to that. But yeah, what really blew my mind was the presence of these celestial beings in the other world, in these lunar mirror worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the celestial gods are like 60 feet high and they just radiate like you wouldn't believe, you know. Spirit beings, beings in the celestial worlds that are half human, half animal. So like fauns, say for example. And so intelligent and so fast and so communicative. So yeah, when you start to look inside those worlds, like, so much of it is just beyond our comprehension, just way beyond our comprehension. But they're all there to help us, to love us, to care for us, and to assist us. And of course, the ghouls will be there fighting, trying to stop you making progress. But that's what Armageddon is all about. Armageddon is essentially a fight between every single man, woman, and child on the planet today to retrieve their soul in the presence of demonic forces.
Right. And you've done quite a bit of fighting, haven't you?
I have, yes, but then that's like I was sort of trained as a soldier in those worlds, and some of us were, you know? And other
yes.
people are creators, and other people are holy men, and other people are medicine women, and, you know, other people are just healers of one kind or another, whether it's a psychotherapist or a hypnotherapist or whatever, you know, but everybody, there's lots of different jobs, you know? But
yes.
my job was to fight, so I go in there, fight those worlds, fight in those worlds, and it sounds so ludicrous and so mad to even talk about it, but I don't go in on my own, there are four or five of us to go together usually. And they're real fights, you know, they're real fights. The ghouls die, you know, and we could die if we make a mistake, you know. So it's part of the Armageddon of, like, each person has to fight their own demons, don't they? You know, one day, someday, you have to fight your dysfunctions or you have to fight your hatred or... I mean, one common sort of darkness is disdain. You know, people are not really aware of how much disdain they have for other humans. So they look at the lady in the supermarket and they sort of, you know, turn their nose on her and they don't like these people because they're economically disadvantaged. Or they don't like those people for racial reasons. Or they don't like these people because they don't belong to the right church. And people have like a lot of disdain, you know. They just feel they're so superior. And disdain is a mild form of hatred. So one way that you can process out of tomorrow is start to become aware of how much disdain you have for humanity. Because you have to love everybody, the good, the bad, and the ugly, you know. And
right.
you have to particularly love your tormentors, you know. You just blow love at them and adore them because they're tormenting you. And then bit by bit you'll redeem yourself to a celestial place.
Well, it's something that I always say, if somebody really irritates you, it's probably something within you that you don't want to look at. And
probably.
That's exactly when you should look at it.
Yeah, yeah, probably, you know. And, you know, that some people are just beastly because they're like, they're like inflicting pain, you know? Okay, sometimes you can move, sometimes you can get out of the way. Sometimes you can take the Greyhound bus and go north. But, you know, it's sometimes you can't and you just have to suffer it because it's the nature of the world today. But we have to offer the whole of humanity forgiveness and we have to offer them a soft eye and we have to love them. Doesn't matter how bad they are, we still have to love them.
Most definitely.
Orders is orders.
Yes. In the book, you mentioned the white shadow. Did you want to explain?
Yeah, the white shadow is something that I don't think many people knew about the white shadow. Essentially, everybody knows what a dark shadow is. So the evil person, the pedophile, the rapist, the rip-off merchant, the, you know, the crazy guy, the bent banker, you know, the low-life, whatever, you know. But the white shadow is the darkness that exists in people that pretend they're perfect. So Mr. Nice Guy that's frying the hamburgers and he's hail fellow well met and he's handing out the bottles of beer. And, you know, he hides, let's say, like a sexual predator, a lot of disdain. He's probably like a bent businessman. He's hiding his evil behind this Mr. Nice Guy routine. Or you get this lady and there she is and she's the perfect mother, you know, goody goody two shoes. And she has all this vile sort of hatred, anger, jealousy, backbiting or whatever that's inside her. So there they are. They look white, but they have a deep, deep shadow inside of themselves. So their shadow is they're pretending to be perfect. You know, they're pretending to be white. And some people have the shadow, let's say, where they like to pretend that, let's say, that, I don't know, they're the voice of God. And so they're vectoring information for these sort of like, you know, like low lives that need to be assisted. Or, you know, the magical healer can be a white shadow if the person genuinely believes that, let's say, God has put them on this earth to touch people and to make them better. It's fine. If you can touch people and make them better, God bless you. Go forth and do it. But, you know, it's just the attitude, you see, like where people bring in importance or specialism. A lot of the white shadow is elitism. So I call it in my book, The Cult of the Chosen One. The person that believes they've been chosen as the mouthpiece of God, or they believe that they're particularly special or elevated or risen up. So that we will be risen up and everybody else won't be. That would be the cult of the chosen one. Let's say like certain Christian churches that believe that Jesus is going to come and lift them off the ground and take them all away.
Right.
So the white shadow in the book just talks about these various things, you know. You see, you can heal people as long as you don't make a fuss of it. But if you heal people in a kind of huge, kind of like, look at me, I'm the magical healer, that's the white shadow, you know. Same way you can be generous, provided you don't make a big fuss about your generosity, you know. It's an interesting part of the book because most people have got no idea that that white shadow is a shadow. Of course it is because it's a pretense, you see.
Right. It definitely is. Now, also in here, and when I read this, I actually laughed when you mentioned about the spiritual logo. And the reason why I laughed is they showed me mine and my background is graphic design. So I thought it was a logo for something.
Right.
Not necessarily a spiritual logo, yet the imagery, the colors, I just thought, this is going to be so wild and so cool on the internet when I first was shown it. They didn't clarify it. And that when I read that in your book, I just went, now I understand exactly what they were talking about.
Did you put a graphic on it on your site? Did you put a graphic on that? Did you put a graphic of the logo on your site? No?
Yeah, well, I should, but I haven't. But it was, do you want to explain?
Yeah, I can explain it. You know, like inside those mirror worlds, these lunar mirror worlds, each person has an identity, you know. It's like a thumbprint of energy. It's like a sort of a barcode, you know, that describes them. And they're inside a box. Humans are inside this massive box. Mm-hmm. We call it the logo box. Because inside that box is all the information of your life. Who you've talked to, who you've not talked to. You know, who you did down, who you loved, who you cared for, when you failed. Everything's in this box as a digital recorded memory. But also in the box, what seems to be in there as well is other lives, other reincarnations that you're linked to, or other, let's say, philosophical ideas. So you might be, let's say, for example, in my logo box, I'm linked to these Taoist sages from 2,500 years ago, you know? It's like I'm linked to their order, to their philosophy. You know, the hooded sages, I'm part of that. And that's in my box. Well, somebody else may be linked to Zionism, Christianity, Buddhism, Aramaic studies, whatever it might be. But that would be in their box, whatever it is that's in there. And sometimes the box is quite small. And sometimes the box is like the size of a small warehouse. And sometimes the box is absolutely vast, you know, bigger than the planet. And every human has one. Every human has this sort of reference library, which is this oblong box that has all their information in it.
Yes, and it is amazing to see the information. And they showed it to me very quickly. So there was so much information. It was like I must have had a download at that very moment. And because I understood it, but yet they kept saying, this is your logo. And I'm going, okay, I'll use that for a website, no problem. I even drew it in my journal. And the imagery was just like very awesome to do. And the logo also connects with other people's logos as well if you're with somebody. Yeah, is that correct?
Yeah, definitely. The logos start to intersect. It's like the boxes intersect. And so you can be influenced by the other person adversely or to the good, you know? And
right.
Yeah, definitely. There's no question of it. Their box and your box intersect. There's no question of it. And I'm sure the logo box would be also linked to members of your tribe, members of your family, you know, whatever you happen to be into, you know? So it's vast, though. It's true. It's vast. There's no way you could possibly even begin to comprehend all the information that's inside that box of yours. You could say it's your soul, but almost like soul doesn't seem big enough. If you have, let's say, a warehouse of information, you know, that is your logo box, you follow me? It's fascinating to watch. It's fascinating. They're massive. And the information inside there moves so fast that you can't logically comprehend it all because it's just moving so quickly, you know? The way fractals move, you know, even, you know those animated fractals on the internet? And you see how quickly they're moving? Well, imagine an entire warehouse of those all around you moving that fast, you know, you wouldn't be able to discover exactly what it's all about, but you get a vague idea, you know?
Yes.
And you can see if your box is ugly and dark and dangerous, you know, so that helps you as well, because you think, well, maybe I need to clean up a bit.
Yeah. Now, you also talk about, in the book, how pure energy moves sideways. When people are saying, you want to evolve, you want to go forward or upward.
Yeah.
You're saying the energy goes sideways.
It does. I can clarify that quite simply. Light is described in forward motion, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it travels like a 300,000 kilometers a second forwards, you know? But in addition to the forward motion of light, it has a sideways motion, like a zigzag transverse wave. So you've got to think of, let's say, a very long arrow that's 300,000 kilometers long, and across the shaft of this arrow is this little zigzag light. Okay, that is the transverse wave of light. Now, we discovered when the morph came down and when we could see these lunar worlds that there are spirit worlds to our right and to our left. So if you stand facing north and you put your arms out, you know, there's a spirit world to your east and there's a spirit world to the west. There's many other spirit worlds, but there's definitely two in those directions, you know? So we call those spirit worlds 90 right, because they're 90 degrees at right angles from us. And a lot of the celestial golden light comes from those particular spirit worlds. And so what we attempt to do is we attempt to go wider and sideways. So what I said, for example, in the Art of Redemption, which is sort of my sort of escape manual for people wishing to get out of the matrix, what I said in that book, which came out a couple of years ago, was you have to collapse your ivory tower, you have to collapse the ego's pomposities and its specialness, and you have to collapse all that play acting, and you have to embrace the authentic you, because there's so much power in just being authentic, even if being authentic really hurts and you have to tell people the truth, you know? You embrace the authentic you, you collapse the ivory tower, so like now you don't have the fool on the roof with a rusty gun making a big fuss at the top of his ivory tower. You get him or her off the top of the tower and you bring the fool down on the grass, and that's like the level plane. Then through silence, through humility, through discipline, through, you know, not seeking attention and not seeking the joys and the thrills and spills of the ego's world, you begin to get wider and you go sideways. And the only ascension that is possible is sideways. So the Bible may have said Jesus ascended up into heaven, but it was like a slightly clerical error, because if he ascended any place, he would have had to walk out and dematerialize sideways.
Yes.
And that's because that's where those dimensions are. So if you go up at about 100 miles, your lungs will be crushed, you know, and you die for lack of oxygen, you know. So you can't ascend upwards very far before you get into serious, serious physiological problems, you know.
Most definitely.
Yeah, even at 33,000 feet, you'd freeze to death, you know? So ascension is sideways, because you can actually walk out of this earth plane. But when you do, you have to walk to a dimension that's only a few feet away. It's not like a trillion miles. That world is only a few feet away from you, but it's beside you. And because we're kind of like inside a little ball, inside a sort of a sphere, it doesn't matter which way you're facing, it's always beside you. So if you were to twist from north and now you're facing north-northeast, it's always at 90. It moves around with you. Those dimensions move with you when you move. So it's always a 90. So we tell people, hey, collapse your importance, collapse your arguments, collapse your dysfunction, collapse your seeking for things you haven't got, collapse your repressed anger, collapse your disdain, collapse your dishonesties, become humble, and then to start to seek out other people that want to do the same, you know, and then make a tribe and help each other and celebrate and allow yourself in silence and humility and discipline to go sideways. As you go sideways, you will see visions more and more and more, mm-hmm. because we are simultaneously incarnated in many dimensions. We're not mm-hmm. just humans.
Now, is it possible
like
for those...
One?
Yes, I did. Very much so. Is it possible, though, for those other reincarnations to collapse into one?
We haven't seen that happen, but it would... I mean, there are, those worlds are so... mathematically technical, do you follow me?
Yes.
For example, even in a small dimension, let's say a nine-dimensional plane, they're very hard to cope with because there's no up or down. There's no left or right, there's no horizon. You know, you can't really tell where you are spatially from a human point of view where we like horizons. We know where the horizon is, the sun is setting, we can see it, you know? So what could be possible in a 26 multi-dimensional world or what we call the hyperspace or hypersphere?
Right.
It could be... Yeah, all of it could arrive in one person, and then it would be like, well, it would shine brighter than the sun, you know?
Right.
I'm not sure, you know, I don't know. I can't say no and I can't say yes, because that is outside my evolutionary experience. I don't know that answer.
Well, we have Christine on line one. Hello, Christina.
Hello.
Oh, this is Kurt. Hi, Kurt. How are you? Hello.
That you're having in Vegas this summer? How many classes does a student have to take to see the way you see things?
How many classes does it take?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if I could say it's like when you've got to do 37 classes over a period of 3 years and then you get a certificate. Because I've known people that have learned to see in 20 minutes, you know? And then I've had other people that, like, were computer programmers that took 3 years and they still were only just beginning to be able to do it. So it's a lot to do with your aptitude and whether or not you've had those sensibilities, that perception, if you believed in your dreams, if you've had ESP, if you've, you know, understood intuition, feeling, sensitivity. That really depends on that a lot, you know? But generally speaking, most everybody that I teach can see by the end of a weekend, let's say.
Okay. The last days I was going through some struggles, like I thought I had the flu, and I thought MS was flaring up, and then when I came back to life, the first thing I read is about the symptoms of a Kundalini, and it was like everything I'd just gone through, and some of the dreams that I had, because I think I slept 23 hours out of the 24, I would only just get up, and then I'd get vertigo and go back to bed.
Yeah, well, sometimes you need that. You need that respite, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
But the dreams I had were very bizarre and very vivid. In fact, I was going to talk to you, Jen, about it because I felt like I left, that like I was traveling.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you were, hon. If you feel mm-hmm. like you were traveling, you probably were, you know.
I have no doubt you were.
Yeah. Yeah, you just have to begin to become an observer of those worlds and whatever, you know. And I'm not saying, hey, you've got to come to one of my courses. You can do it on your own. And I have a blog called stillwildblog.com. And it's designed
I've actually done your website
a free
right
seminar.
Now.
Do you ever go on there?
Mm-hmm. I'm there right now.
Yeah. Well, it's designed as like a free seminar, you know. So it goes on all day, every day. We pretty much post every single day, except when there's a slight glitch in the matrix and I'm traveling and I don't quite get the post up by midnight. But generally it's post every day, you follow that, you know. And then, hey, if you feel like coming to Las Vegas in September with me or Amsterdam in July, come. But you can learn to see without me, you know. I don't tell people you need me. It's just I'm the fast track, you know.
The descriptions of Jesus' ascension and, you know, Elijah's ascension, I've always known that they went through a veil. I knew they didn't go up to the sky.
You knew they didn't go up. No, they didn't go up. They went sideways.
I just
sideways.
Knew that Definitely. I knew. I don't know how I knew. I just knew.
Yeah, it doesn't detract from the ascension. It doesn't detract from the humility and the sacrifice of Jesus
mm-hmm.
at all. It's just to explain things technically. One of the things that happened to us is that because we go into these lunar mirror worlds, and because we can triangulate information by, you know, comparing it to other information, we can give people very, very, very accurate descriptions of what's what in there. Do you follow me?
Yes,
and definitely this ascension sideways is definitely what happened. That's not to say you can't levitate, because that levitate, it is possible to levitate as well. But we're talking about walking out of this earth plane, you know? And you just walk through a gap in reality, that's it.
They see the rip in the universe right there in their kitchen. They could be cooking dinner and they see the rip right there in the kitchen.
You're more likely to see it when you're sat home cooking the dinner for the family.
Yep.
And, you know, caring for them and providing for them and loving them and fixing up the supper, then you would be, let's say, doing it on the top of a mountain in Tibet,
right.
You know?
Yeah, just like that. And it's like, oh, okay, there's a rift in the dimension right there in
just
the kitchen. Now, if she'd have stopped cooking, could she have walked through it?
Well, I don't know about the cooking, but, I mean, if it's next to you, go through it, see what happens.
Yeah.
See what happens. Most everybody seems to come back, as far as we know.
I don't know. But the space-time, that's always been very interesting to me. And
yeah.
I've actually seen future stuff come true.
Yeah. Well, that's it. Well, that's the whole point of visionary, is to be able to understand a certain amount of what's going to happen in the future and to position yourself, you know, as strongly as possible. You know, I'm not a great believer in buying dried food and stuff like that, and I know some people do.
No, you don't need to.
But I don't know. I'm not keen on that idea. But I'm not saying don't do it. But I live in hotels, and where am I going to put all this dried food? You know?
You really
I have a house, so I don't. But I don't have a house. I live in hotels. So.
But I also want to mention that you can go on YouTube's, and you have a lot of stuff on YouTube's as well, explaining all this.
It's very interesting
to watch.
Yeah, I have a channel called Stuart Wild One, and we're gradually mounted 100 YouTubes. So we're just getting up speed now. I think we've mounted 14 or 15 in the last couple of months, and now they're going up every few days, you know?
Well, I'm going to opt into your newsletter. Is that okay?
You're asking me about the newsletter?
I'm going to opt in.
Oh, yes. Well, please, all you got to do is join the Stuart Wild A-list. You can come up any time, but essentially you get information and you get free downloads and you get protection prayers and you get sounds. I mean, just get a whole bunch of free stuff, you know, which is just delivered to your mailbox rather than just being posted on the site, you know.
Well, with that, what am I wasting
my time? Don't cost nothing, and you can come up any time. You know, we're not holding you in or anything.
Thank you for answering the question about your classes this summer. I was looking at your schedule. Jennifer, thank you for having Stuart Wild on your show. It's been interesting.
Well, he has amazing information and a lot of experience to share, so.
Yeah, it's kind of blowing me away. Well, the timing is blowing me away. So, you know, everything happens in that perfect timing.
Sweetheart, if you can afford it, get a copy of The Art of Redemption from the local library or buy from Amazon, because that's the book that people ought to read first, because that lays the whole groundwork of how you get out of this matrix, how you get out of the guilt, how you get out of pain and agony of it all, how you escape into these other worlds, you know? And then The Art of Redemption kind of set it all up, and then Grace Guy in the End of Days is the second part of it, you know, the second part of the story.
Perfect. So, okay,
I
will open the line up. I called earlier and it was busy. I don't know how I got through.
Oh, well, there you go.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Just to mention this to you, Stuart, someone named Kirk called and his line wasn't very well, but he did want to thank you for all your work that you've done. He's really appreciated it.
Oh, well, thank you
so
very much.
But his phone line was not cooperating today, so I did want to mention that. And if there's anybody else that would like to call in and has questions, again, the phone number is 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. Now, why don't we talk a little bit about the workshop. You have one in Holland, if anybody wants to fly over to Holland. And that's in June, or is that July?
July. It's in July. It's about July the 10th. Yeah, I just do two gigs every year, you know, because that's all the time that I can really afford. And so I do one in Amsterdam, because it's a very easy hub for Europeans to come to, you know? People fly in from Eastern Europe, Southern Europe, everything goes through Amsterdam. And the other one I do in America, Las Vegas, because again, it's an easy hub. You know, there's also some tours and trips, inexpensive tours and trips to get to Las Vegas. And of course, all the people around there, Arizona, California, Utah, and so on, they can drive if they have to, you know? So that's the reason why I put my two gigs in those hubs, and essentially it's a weekend on learning how to see. It's a weekend on the morph, and it's a weekend of just instructions and information. And helping you to understand, like, where are you going to go, and what are you going to do if this whole world around you starts to really rattle and collapse. Do you follow me? So it's essentially getting in touch with your spirit guides, with your inner self, your inner knowing, so that you can make confident decisions about what to do. I can't wag my finger and tell you, well, you should, I don't know, you know, buy gold and, you know, head to Bujumbura. You know, that may not necessarily be the answer for every single person. Do you follow me?
Yes.
You have to figure it out yourself, what you need and what your family is and where you need, you know, like, but you got to be sure inside your soul, inside your spirit, because your spirit will guide you to safety. It'll show you the highest, you know, the highest solutions.
Most definitely they will. And what are the dates for the one in Vegas?
Again, I never know what anything is. They've got to go on the Stuart Wild site, stuartwild.com, click events. I think Vegas is September the 10th, 6th, 7th, 8th, or something like that. And actually, I'll look it up as I talk to you. And Amsterdam is in July. And that's it. In 2 seconds, I will know exactly. Here we are. July the 10th, 11th, and 12th is in Amsterdam. And September the 4th, 5th, and 6th is in Las Vegas. And that's those two gigs there.
Yes.
So, and then ayahuasca, we do it all the time. Our next ayahuasca event is in August. And again, if you go to stuartwild.com and you click events, everything that we're doing is in there. So we look forward to having some people from your area, Tucson, come on down, you know. We get a lot of Americans in our classes, as you can imagine. A lot of Americans come to the ayahuasca, many, many, many. I think 40% of all of our clients are Americans.
Wow. And I actually have talked to a woman who has done that, and she absolutely loves it. Her name is Teresa.
She
thinks you're awesome, and she was very excited to hear that you're going to be on my show. So she highly recommends any and all of your trips, all your workshops.
Well, the ayahuasca thing is, ayahuasca can be a bit scary for people, the idea of paddling up, you know, the Amazon or something like that, and not knowing whether you're going to be looked after or ripped off or whatever. We do ours in a 5-star resort. So everybody comes, they're, you know, beautifully looked after, and they're transfers back and forth, and everybody gets a beautiful cabin in what essentially is a sort of garden paradise. And everybody gets a fireplace and a cabin, and they're really, really looked after, and it has a spa and a swimming pool. And so we just went the upmarket way. That's not to say that some of the hippie outfits that do ayahuasca aren't good people, because they are, you know? And I certainly have been to a lot of those shamans, you know, the less formal ones. But we decided we would offer like a Rolls Royce service for people who didn't mind flying to Quito. It's not a long flight from Texas. It's like about maybe, I don't know, it's about 5 or 6 hour flight to Quito from Texas, you know. Maybe 5 hours.
That's not too bad.
What?
That's not too bad. I mean, it's a 7-hour drive to Vegas. So.
Yeah, it's 5 hours, I think. It's less than 5 hours from Houston. I know that. So it's not, you know, I think South America is a long way away, but it's not really, you know. I mean, Boston's further, you know. So it's 4 or 5 hours from Houston, and the hotels are beautiful, the resort's beautiful, and the whole gig is very safe and very beautiful, you know. So we appeal to a more, I suppose, affluent customer, but it's for those people that like to think, hey, I want to go try this, but I don't want to paddle up the Amazon to do it, you know.
Right.
Or risk doing it with some hippies up the road where they may not be legal or something like that, because in Ecuador, ayahuasca is 100% legal as well, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
It sounds like a wonderful adventure.
It is. I mean, people are like in awe, because ayahuasca is like transcendence in a cup, you know?
Yes.
You drink that, all the books go out the window about half hour after you drink it.
Mm-hmm.
And I swear, you get to see these celestial heavens. You get to see the nature of the universe, DNA, the evolution of humanity, the future destiny of our humanity. I mean, you get to see it all, you know? And then you also get to see your beastly mother-in-law and that sort of stuff, so it teaches you everything.
Well, if it, nothing else, it make the next time you see your mother-in-law quite interesting.
Yeah, it does. But no, I tell you what, a lot of people are very much healed on ayahuasca because they see how they need to change in the way they handle relationships and stuff, so it is a big healer like that. And I know people who've done therapy for 10 years who, like, took one ayahuasca journey and it fixed them, you know? Where 10 years of therapy, they're still trying to work it out, you know? So it's like sometimes it's the fast track, or sometimes the therapy is good, but you take the ayahuasca and it completes the lessons. Do you follow me?
Yes.
Like, it's the full stop, it's the period, it's the final double line that you put underneath the manuscript, which is the story of your dysfunction, let's say, you know?
Most definitely.
So it can help you. It can really help you, ayahuasca. It's great.
It's well known for its healing properties and the way that it can really make you understand what's really going on in many ways, in many dimensions, all at the same time.
Yeah. The Times of London did an article about it being the sort of the new psychotherapy. That, you know, like, regular psychotherapists and psychiatrists and stuff are sending their clients to ayahuasca to help them resolve the deep, deep emotional issues deep inside. Well, you know, as a hypnotherapist yourself, you would see those deep inner sort of fractures, and you would attempt to try to get people to heal them, wouldn't you? You know, by bringing them out and showing them. And that's what you're trying to do. And so that's a gift that you have, you know, to, like, to see things inside people and to tickle it out of them without them reacting too much.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, without them going nuts and hating it for it. And it's the same with ayahuasca. But then so many people are trying to do that nowadays. They're trying to bring a healing to the world, and that's what we really need, you know. There's an Australian shaman called Darpan, and he said to me the other day, he has a song that he sings, and there's a line in the song that says, "We are the people that we have been waiting for."
Wow.
And that's the truth. We are. You know, we've all waited for these angels to arrive on Earth to save us. Well, we're here. We are those angels. We are those experts. We are those people. You know, we are the people that we have been waiting for. So you just have to let down, open up, you know, and get chatted to the next person. I say in one of my books that the spiritual journey is 4 feet long. It's 1 foot from your head to your heart, and it's 3 feet from your heart out there to hug the first person you meet. And that's the journey. That's the journey. Let's join, let's celebrate, you know, let's become a tribe, let's help each other.
Most definitely. And with this, I do want to tell people again some of the websites, because you have so many. The information, you have it out there, it's available. You have your books, you have 20 books. Go to Amazon, go to your library, find his books. They're wonderful read. His new book, again, is Grace Gaia and the End of Days, an alternative way for advanced souls. Wonderful book. I really enjoyed it. I'm going to get The Art of Redemption now and see how that's going. And it's just a wonderful thing. And, again, the website is stuartwild.com. You have stuartwildblog.com.
Sure.
Any others you want to mention?
No, they're fine. People will find me through those two. I mean, we do have other sites, but that's fine. If they could just go to, it's STUARTWILDE, stuartwild.com. And our sites are upgraded daily, absolutely daily. They're flying along all the time, you know? So there's always information to go back to if you haven't been for a few days. There'll be something new there, you know?
Yes, and I've been looking at it since I got the book, and a little bit before I've been looking, and wonderful information. Every day is something wonderful.
Thank you. Thank
I
you
really,
much.
I really appreciate you being on. It's
Thank
been
you.
Great information and a great honor.
It's sweet.
And you're most welcome. This is Jennifer Hillman saying thank you very much for joining us on air. And with that, with each breath of air, we hope you gain new insights and information. Until next time, many blessings and good night.